from KQED.
From San Diego, this is the California Report podcast. I'm John Sepulveda.
And I'm Lily Jamali in San Francisco. Los Angeles teachers are going back to work this morning. Their union, United Teachers Los Angeles, reached a tentative deal with the LA Unified School District. Last night, over 30,000 union members voted to approve the deal, which ended the strike. At issue was higher pay, classroom size, and increased staffing. KCRW's Jenny Hamill has more.
The strike spanned 6 days and affected 500,000 students. At Tuesday's press conference announcing the deal, everyone seemed relieved it was finally over, especially District Superintendent Austin Buettner.
We welcome back with open arms and warm hearts our educators and look forward to a new day of learning for all of our students.
The agreement includes a 6% pay increase with back pay, but it goes well beyond that. It promises 300 more full-time nurses and over 80 full-time teacher librarians, and a voice in charter schools located on the same campus. The deal also addresses perhaps the biggest issue of all, the reduction of classroom size. UTLA President Alex Caputo-Pearl celebrated that point at a massive rally in front of LA City Hall following the announcement of the deal.
We are going to see those class sizes going down, 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 down. You did that!
Elementary school teacher Mitchell Cohen said the final outcome makes going on strike worth it.
It's been 6 days and I've lost well over $1,000, and not being able to see my students has been a bummer, but I'm glad we were out here striking, and it's very powerful seeing so many thousands of people.
The school board is set to vote on the tentative agreement next week. For the California Report, I'm Jenny Hamill in Los Angeles.
Now, LA Unified teachers got largely what they wanted, and in fact, school board officials knew what they wanted months ago. So why go through a strike if you're just going to give people what they want? That was the first question I asked Nick Melvoin. He is the vice president of the LA Unified Board of Education. I spoke to him shortly before the teachers finalized the vote.
This was not something the district and the board wanted. Unfortunately, the union had walked away from the table and then spent last week striking. But I think we saw that when we were able to come to a room together and work around the clock that we were able to get this agreement. I had hoped that it would have come earlier, but we are where we are now, and we're just excited that teachers will be back. And I think this isn't the end. This is the beginning of hopefully a new partnership with UTLA to advocate for increased funding and to figure out how to continue to support our public schools.
You know, Oakland teachers look a lot like Los Angeles teachers just a few weeks ago. What would be your advice right now to the Oakland board sitting in the same spot you were 3 weeks ago?
Well, I think that we see kind of this in the zeitgeist, these teacher strikes. Now, most of them were aimed at state capitals, and that was what I was advocating for the whole time. Let's march collectively on Sacramento, where 90% of school funding comes from, where we're 43rd out of 50 in per pupil funding. And so my advice would be collectively, you know, the teachers union in Oakland and the board, why don't you agree to strike, but march to Sacramento? It's much closer than it is from LA. And let's demand that we go from near the bottom of states and per student funding to near the top. My hope would be that, you know, rather than doing another local strike that ends with an acknowledgement that the state needs to invest in its kids, just head off that week of local activity and march to Sacramento, and LA Unified will join you.
Finally, what do you think the kids did when they weren't in school?
Kids were looking at instructional videos. They were doing online resources. Teachers, of course, but students and their families were really in the middle of this. And I hope that the consciousness that has been awoken by the strike will continue, and that people will vote for more funding for our schools and be thinking about our public schools, not just as they drive to work and honk at picketers, but really all the time, because there are a few more important resources to invest in than our public schools.
I don't get to say this very often, so I'm going to use the moniker right now. Vice President, thanks so much for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
Didn't I sound so smart saying Vice President?
You can call me Vice President anytime you want.
You know what? I'm going to call you Vice President of Financial News now for the California Report. I don't know who the president would be. It sure wouldn't be me, because I don't even know what this next story is about. It begins with this phrase, debtor in possession financing. That sounds like those notices I get all the time telling me that I haven't paid my bills.
Yeah, and they're impounding your car.
Oh, I can't wait for that to happen. I'm gonna put that on my Twitter feed at John LGC. Go ahead.
Yeah, well, on Wall Street, this is known as DIP financing, and Yesterday morning, we learned from PG&E in a Securities and Exchange filing with the U.S. government that they have secured $5.5 billion in this type of loan PG&E has from several major Wall Street banks. So J.P. Morgan, Bank of America, Barclays among them. So the company announcing this Tuesday, and what it basically means, John, is that the pieces are now in place for the utility to enter into bankruptcy protection as early as next week, January 29th. They continue to maintain that bankruptcy protection is their only viable option as these liabilities from wildfires continue to mount.
So while I was joking about, you know, not knowing the term, it sounds like this is really serious, because at the end of the day, what PG&E is going to do, specifically with regards to this bankruptcy, is really going to affect people who both died and were victimized by the several wildfires that have either been confirmed to have been started by PG&E equipment, or in the case of the campfire, is believed to have been started by PG&E equipment.
That's exactly right. We still don't have a CAL FIRE report on the Tubbs Fire, one of the biggest up in the North Bay last year. Certainly still no report on the Camp Fire, which was the deadliest and most devastating fire in our state's history. But what this means, this bankruptcy protection approach, it's going to have very serious impacts for any victim of fire that is trying to sue PG&E and get some kind of payout, some sort of monetary compensation for what happened to them.
Finally, why would Barclays or Bank of America, like, I don't understand how finance works, as we often joke on the show, but I would think that if somebody was coming to me and they were saying, hey, can I borrow X amount of millions of dollars? We're fixing to go bankrupt. I'd be like, no, that's cool. Why would they lend them this money?
Well, DIP financing, that fancy term we were talking about, the kind of money, the kind of conditions that come with this money are more onerous than you would get if you were not a company on your way into or in bankruptcy. And the interest generally that you pay on this kind of credit, this kind of loan, is a bit higher, certainly, than what you'd get under normal circumstances. That is exactly the argument that a major shareholder is making for why PG&E should not go into bankruptcy protection, that they are getting these much more onerous conditions on this type of loan, and that ultimately, you know, they will stand to get hurt for sure. They have a ton of skin in the game here, but that there are a whole host of other people, including fire victims, including ratepayers, that will ultimately get hurt by this.
That's crazy. Well, I know that you're keeping an eye on that, Lily, for changes as they come. I want to talk about changes of a different type, this to the juvenile justice system. Two of California's top officials were in Stockton on Tuesday. When I say top officials, I'm talking about the governor, Gavin Newsom. I'm talking about the attorney general, Javier Becerra. KQED's Alex Hall was there.
The visits were uncoordinated, but eerily related. Attorney General Javier Becerra announced his office had reached a settlement with Stockton Unified School District just a few hours after Governor Gavin Newsom visited a youth prison.
The idea that we still have a juvenile justice system connected to the adult system makes no sense to me.
Newsom told inmates and state officials at OH Close Youth Correctional Facility that his office plans to move the Division of Juvenile Justice from the Department of Corrections and Rehabilitation to the Health and Human Services Agency.
To address the issues of health and human service, to address the issues that led you to this place in the first place. What were those triggers?
At a press conference across town, Attorney General Becerra seemed to answer Newsom's question.
Actions like these lead students to begin to go down the wrong road.
Becerra announced that after years of investigating, the Department of Justice settled with Stockton Unified School Police for a pattern of discrimination, which led to Black and Latino students and disabled students being criminalized for minor misconduct.
Oftentimes that tracked a lot of these students into the criminal justice system, which begins that very vicious cycle that many consider the school-to-prison pipeline.
Stockton Unified has agreed to reform its policies and be monitored by the Justice Department for the next 5 years. Governor Newsom says his office aims to begin overhauling the state's juvenile justice system in July. For the California Report, I'm Alex Hall in Stockton.
Well, before we end today, I want to talk a little bit about an early show of strength for California Senator Kamala Harris. Now, I encourage everyone who cares about politics to follow politics more closely with our political team. They, of course, put out political breakdown from KQED, and you can download that podcast. But this caught my eye, Lily, because anyone who has half a brain about politics would know that this is a big deal. Kamala Harris, who is running for president, the senator, the junior senator from our state, has raised over $1.5 million in the first 24 hours of announcing her candidacy. And what that signals, because most of this is from small donors, is that there is a lot of enthusiasm among the Democratic base that she's going to run.
Yeah, I mean, I know she's holding a rally this coming Sunday in Oakland to kick off her campaign. And it got me thinking about when I last covered a political rally in Oakland, it was Bernie Sanders back in 2016. Talk about someone who had a lot of pull with small donors.
And, you know, I want to make sure we credit Politico for breaking this story. I haven't seen this anywhere else. And the only person who I've seen generate as much excitement among Democrats is actually Beto O'Rourke of Texas, who just happened to be coincidentally last year. The California report was there for in Texas because of family separation. But I saw the same kind of star power with him. Mm-hmm. Kirsten Gillibrand, who is the senator from New York, Elizabeth Warren, who was, you know, a real darling of Democrats even just 7 years ago. They haven't released those same type of numbers, and there's no indication to show that there's this enormous groundswell of support. We heard from our own Guy Marzorati about how California moving its primary up could help. And of course, Nevada is an early primary state. You would assume that Kamala Harris would do well there. But Politico also has a story about how because Kamala Harris went to an HBCU, she has this incredible network in South Carolina. So we're starting to see her really line up these early states very quickly.
HBCU, define that.
Historically Black college and university. I actually attended one myself. I went to Florida A&M.
Awesome. Well, we're going to end it there. That is the California Report podcast for this Wednesday, January 23rd, a production of KQED Public Radio. I'm Lily Jamali.
And I'm John Sepulvedo in San Diego.
Support for the California Report comes from Collective Health. American employers are in the healthcare business. It's time they had the technology to drive it. CollectiveHealth.com. Paint Care. Through Paint Care, paint manufacturers make it easier for households and businesses to recycle leftover house paint with over 800 convenient drop-off locations around California. And Eric and Wendy Schmidt, whose Fund for Strategic Innovation supports transformative ideas that benefit humanity while protecting the natural world, recognizing through science the interdependence of all living systems.